Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hi, I'm John Meacham, the host of Cadence 13's new podcast, Fate of Fact, on how America and its political parties got to where we are today. Available now on Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
He's a bully with $17 million in a security detail.
Quit the tough guy act. You know where to find me. Any place, cowboy.
It's common sense. You know, some things are law, and I'm all in favor of it. And some things are common sense.
And I heard a boom in my whole house shook.
This is the Reardon Roundtable.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It is a very important post-election Reardon Roundtable as we roll in here on a Friday afternoon. Let's say hi to Sue Thomas first and foremost. How are you, Sue?
I am well, thank you. Happy Friday.
How is that flooding looking out in my neck of the woods along the Merrimack?
Well, just kind of what it was this morning. I don't think it's moved much.
But 141 is still going to be closed there, right?
Yeah.
844.
I think for the weekend.
Yeah, we're going to keep people posted on that. Jane, how are you this afternoon?
I am good. Okay. I am good. We got lots to discuss.
Well, we're going to talk about a lot. State Rep Steve Butts is here as well. Hello, Steve. How are you?
Hey, Mark. Doing great.
Wait, hang on a second.
Having
That's
me?
Not the right mic.
There he is.
Sometimes I get a little confused here, too. Greg Keller, testing.
Greg Keller.
Oh, no, I'm wrong again.
Oh, keep that one off.
That's a good
testing,
one.
Testing. Greg Keller.
Well, let me start here, gang. You have headphones on, but let me start with a little, you think I would have figured out the mic situation before the show started. You would have been wrong, but let me start with a little audio here. This is first and foremost, Charlamagne the God.
We'll say this. I'm glad everybody's having a sense of optimism because the reality is we have no choice because we're here now. Donald J. Trump is going to be the 47th president of the United States of America, like it or not, and we all hope for the best for this country. That's all we can do, but don't y'all find it strange that now that he's won, they're not calling him a threat to democracy. They're not calling him a fascist. I mean, damn, on Monday.
They're not calling him anything.
On Monday, they was just calling him that. I would think that, you know, if you really believe that, then somebody's speech would be about how America effed up and how.
Yeah, you know, I think he's right about that. We'll get reaction. The next cuts are a little bit longer, but I think I've heard nobody better than this woman, Julie Rogjinsky, who is a Democrat consultant, explain some of the things that happened.
I'm going to speak some hard truths to my friends in the Democratic Party. This is not Joe Biden's fault. It's not Kamala Harris's fault. It's not Barack Obama's fault. It is the fault of the Democratic Party in not knowing how to communicate effectively to voters. We are not the party of common sense, which is the message that voters sent to us. For a number of reasons. For a number of reasons, we don't know how to speak to voters.
So she outlined those reasons.
No. When we address Latino voters as Latinx, for instance, because that's the politically correct thing to do, it makes them think that we don't even live on the same planet as they do. When we are too afraid to say that, hey, college kids, if you're trashing a campus at Columbia University because you're unhappy about some sort of policy and you're taking over a university and you're trashing it and preventing other students from learning, that is unacceptable. But we're so worried about alienating one or another cohort in our coalition that we don't know what to say when normal people look at that and say, wait a second, I send my kids to college so they can learn, not so that they can burn buildings and trash lawns, right?
That is a very important point. Now, here's what I know about our two panelists here this afternoon that are on the left, that you guys don't feel that way. And I know you will criticize your party, but I would not put my friend Jane and Steve, I would not put you in the category of people who are disconnected from reality here. You're not defund the police people. You didn't support what happened on those campuses. But Jane, as you know, a lot of people, to her point, in your party were unwilling to condemn things. Even 3 days before the election, Kamala Harris wouldn't say how she voted on Prop 36 in California. A measure that was passed by 70%
in every single county.
Right, about crime.
Here's the thing. I mean, this woman, she was right on, spot on. And if our party does not reflect, I mean, it's not just our communication. I think we have a very difficult problem communicating with voters. And I've said that. I've been clear about that. But we also got some wacky ideas that are just, I mean, this tyranny of the minority sort of platform that we've been living in, where we're going to spend, you know, 90% of our time on 0.1% of the population and just eradicate everybody else.
That's a valid point.
Is a problem. And we are making our party smaller by the minute. I mean, I am old enough to remember when I was in the governor's office that you could be a pro-life Democrat. Now, you better not show your face at a Democratic event if you're pro-life. Why would we make our party so small? When have we talked about, when are we fighting, when is our priority, not that we don't do it, but when is our priority working people instead of brats at a college who are entitled white progressives who are ruining everything that we hold dear in this country? I mean, I saw a poll. It made me physically sick. White progressives hate America. I mean, straight up say it.
I'm very aware
And
of
I'm
that.
Like, why? How? First of all, how would we let Bernie Sanders, who is not even a Democrat, never has been a Democrat, how does he have such a say? And how do these people who hate America have a say in our party? People keep saying to me, Jane, why don't you just turn into a Republican? I'm like, no, I am not giving up my party. Our government and our society doesn't work if we don't have conscientious sort of objections on both sides. And I am not giving up my party to a bunch of kooks who hate this country.
Look, in your fairness, here's the thing with this week. I know you, and I love you dearly. And you've been saying this for a while. This is not something you're just saying post-election, right? Steve, you too. But there's a lot of people that are all of a sudden having this epiphany when, you know, you've been getting over
that,
knocked on the head about this.
We were Satan for saying
that. So here's the epiphany that I would say in the last few days. I was just in Jeff City yesterday, and that is clearly too many Democrats, myself included on this, were just out of touch of where the electorate was. And if the election results didn't show that Tuesday night, I mean, you're just blind as you can be. I mean,
it's racism, Steve, and misogyny.
Yeah, and that's why he got
Keller. She sounds like us.
I know, right?
Voter turnout amongst blacks and Hispanics. I mean, there's just no way you can't.
We failed.
That. But I would say when you strip it all away, what we as Democrats have lost, we have lost the moral high ground as being the party of the working men and women of America. I mean, several of us in this room remember, I could give you a simple definition not that long ago, 30 years ago. Democrats are for working people. Mm-hmm. Republicans are for rich people. And somehow,
we're upside down. We're upside down right now.
Letting 1%. Less than 1% of the population of Democrats run the show. And people have kowtowed to people like Megan Green, Cori Bush, Jamal Bowman. I mean, these people have been running the place, and nobody would stand up to them and say no.
But pendulums swing, and they're starting to fall.
Keller, your observations here.
This was a generational election. I was talking to a friend of mine recently who actually just today, who's a former statewide elected official here in the state of Missouri. And this person said, this is not like 2008. 2008 was an important election. This is not like an election that I have seen in the last generation. This is closer to 1992 in that it was a generational election change for exactly the reasons you guys are talking about. Mm-hmm. The people who left the Democrat Party this time around to the representatives, and Jane's point earlier, I kind of feel like they're doing my job this time. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, we did almost, it for
you. It makes it easier on us.
I almost don't want to tap dance on Democrats' grave right now, but I'll try.
But you will.
I think
you
will. Yeah, he will.
His feet are shuffling.
Right.
Look at the states that had the largest change in terms of voters switching from Democrat to Republican on a percentage basis. New York, California, New Jersey, Connecticut,
poorly
Illinois,
run urban areas.
Literally the most liberal, the most Democrat states in the entire country. And look at it demographically. Look at the people who the Democrat Party are losing in droves now. Younger blacks,
young
Hispanics.
People.
Young people, 18 to 29.
The bro culture.
This is a generational election. The Democrats are in a big problem. I will also say this. If you watch shows like The View, if you watch a lot of the talking heads, the liberal ones still on CNN, they will go right at Representative Butts and right at Jane on this.
Yes.
The fight on this is just beginning within the Democrat Party, and that is something they're going to have to contend with in the short, medium, and maybe even long term.
All right, hang on. Here is our mayor of St. Louis.
I don't know how you fight racism and bigotry and misogyny and supremacy. I don't know how to fight against that. This country has been fighting against those things for many, many, many years.
So on cue, that's what she says.
You know everything, what?
I mean,
you
that's so lazy. And it's, well, no, it's tone deafness, complete tone deafness.
Yeah, well, and but she probably figures it's going to work in the city. I mean, in all signs seem to, you know, agree with that. But I hope that, I hope city voters wake up. They didn't vote very much. So,
and because that was becoming increasingly irrelevant.
Absolutely.
If you look at the vote totals in the city of St. Louis.
Well, it's scary. Well, we have a crazy board of aldermen for the most part and a mayor who's on another planet because 10% of the people in the city elect these people. And they're you know, and that's a problem. And you know what it shows? It shows that a lot of people in this city have given up. And that's a problem.
That's sad. It really
is. It's incredibly sad. But for her to cry, this racism, you know what?
It's music to my ears. It shows that St. Louis City Democrats have learned absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing from this election. Megan Green just left Twitter today, by the way. So the fact that they are chalking this up exclusively to racism when it is the most crime-infested city in the entire United States.
No, crime's down, Greg.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. I missed that talking point.
Yeah, you did too.
But
yeah.
Keller, I want to talk
about... And thank you, Governor Kehoe.
Some of the... We'll get to all the local races and stuff, too, but let me just kind of talk about some of the emotions from this week as well, because I've had some things that have caught me off guard with friends. I don't know, I guess, exactly how we would have reacted if the election, you know, were to go in the other direction. But I'm pretty sure that if Harris had won, I wouldn't be disowning friends or thinking less of friends who voted for Kamala Harris, because I know how my friends voted anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mark Halperin said a couple of weeks ago, and I played this and I focused on this because I didn't think it was wacky at the time, because I knew that we'd experienced some of this. But Halperin said to Tucker Carlson, he feels like we're going to have the biggest mental health crisis this country's ever seen. Now,
what do you mean? We already have
it. I know, but that sounded hyperbolic. But look, I'm seeing things out there that are just stunning to me, where people cannot really grasp what happened. Now, here's my point on this, Greg, and I think you know this perhaps more than our friends on the left. You guys... The legacy media did this to people. They lie. You don't have to believe me. You don't even have to believe anyone on Fox or any conservative pundit. Go to Yuri Berliner from NPR, who wrote that piece in the spring and went into very specific details about the bias at NPR. This is what they do. And then they're shocked. And the New York Times all of a sudden shocked by the rejection of some of these things. I think that we need a deep examination of the media. Unfortunately, they're not going to change their stripes, Greg. I think alternative media...
Because they still have an audience.
Well,
that's why.
Not
as long
very much.
As they have, I know, but as long as they have an audience. I mean, here's the thing. People, like, at the same time that they elected all Republicans, we also have the abortion amendment passed,
right.
And we also passed a minimum wage with, you know, like paid time off. Okay. People don't hate traditionally Democratic values. They hate Democrats because Democrats have turned into sanctimonious infants. I mean, they've infantilized an entire section of the population. And I'm not even, I mean, I've not been known to be polite on these issues, but this is not the time to be polite. I'm watching these people on social media and I'm like, these people are, they're not fit to be adults. They're not functioning as adults. I get it. We're all into this. I mean, this is our job. I would argue that I'm more into this than some of these crazy people. And these people.
But they're reacting in different ways.
Yeah. Yes.
Here's what's going to be scary, I think, for Democrats and the media for the next year or so, is the Trump campaign, the Trump administration is going to go as hard at the media and at the administrative state, using the Department of Justice and every means at the disposal, as the Biden administration was in going after Trump and his people. You are going to see them forcefully marginalized. You're going to see Trump use the exact same tactics that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris used against him and his former administration. And it's coming, guys.
Democrats
overplayed
their hand.
It's going to be bad.
That was gonna happen.
Yes.
All the things all the things that you guys excused at the time are going to be visited upon you. And you're going to find it extremely uncomfortable.
Hey, Greg, don't you think we should get rid of the filibuster? Doesn't that sound like a good idea right about now?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah, no. Funny how that works, right? Hang on, we got two more segments to go on the Reardon Roundtable. It's a Friday afternoon.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event.
BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hi, I'm John Meacham, the host of Cadence 13's new podcast, Fate of Fact, on how America and its political parties got to where we are today. Available now on Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Jane, former Senator Lamping, who spent quality time with me on election night, was here for the roundtable last week, says Jane can't switch to an R because she wouldn't be on the roundtable then. So there might be a little truth to that.
Well, I said I'm not letting these kooks take it over. I'm going to be I'm going to become a normal opposition.
State Rep Steve Butts, Republican consultant Greg Keller. Let's talk some, Steve, I'll start with you on some of the state and local stuff that happened. You know, as Jane pointed out, look, democracy was thriving in Missouri. You had Republican candidates who were overwhelmingly elected or reelected. You had Amendment 3 passing by a safe margin. You had Amendment 2 barely passing. I'm a little confused by the boat at the Lake of the Ozarks. That one doesn't make any sense to me, but what would you say about the statewide results?
Yeah, I'm with you on the casino at the Lake of the Ozarks. I don't know. I supported both. That being said, after millions of dollars on both sides, more millions on the Republican side, less millions on our side, and tens of thousands of hours mailing stuff, knocking on doors, at the end of the day, we flipped two seats in the House, they flipped two seats in the House, and we're exactly where we were. Help me out here on the Senate side. I think we flipped one, you flipped one.
Exactly.
We're exactly where we are. Not one thing changed, even at the statewide level. I just find this to be amazing. So there are lots of people.
Were you surprised? Because obviously we had talked about the Peerless and David Gregory race. There was some anxiety by Republicans, but he won pretty comfortably.
I mean, it was single digits, as we were saying. But I was thinking, I went to his watch party last as I was reporting live.
He was a good candidate.
He was a great candidate. And I just thought.
And I think he got some Republican support.
You know, it would be, you know, maybe we'd be watching that one till 11 o'clock at night. But I walked into that watch party at 9:15 out of the Drury in Chesterfield. It was very quiet, and he was ready to give the concession
speech.
We sure
made change in St. Louis County.
Jane, we'll get to that. Jane has said nice things about Mike Kehoe. Do you have a relationship with Mike?
I do. And I think he's going to be, one, I think he's going to be a really good governor, but I think he's going to be a good governor that has a St. Louis, at least, focus, that he knows
he understands.
To help this city and this region.
We need a governor who's a leader, and I think Kehoe has that, you know, certainly there's an opportunity for that, but he has the chops, Greg, wouldn't you say?
I think he's got the chops.
I think
he knows how to work with the legislature. I would just like to point out that the biggest, of course, 2 weeks ago, all the Democrats were talking about how their abortion of ballot initiative was going to carry all of their candidates across the line,
whether it was the House or the Senate.
But you're right.
And none of that came to fruition. The big loser,
the
huge loser the other night that no one is talking about, I guess, nor should they, is Rusty Carnahan. Surprise, surprise, Rusty Carnahan, chairman of the Missouri Democratic Party, racks up another huge defeat. Despite all of their promises, they gain nothing in the House. Despite all of his promises, they gain nothing in the Senate. Their statewide offices. Donald Trump won this state by more than he has ever won it before. He won it by 19 points. Elad Gross, Elad, whatever that little guy's name is, he lost by 22 points. Multiple of their statewide candidates lost by 22 points. Democrats in the state were absolutely decimated. It was gorgeous. It was wonderful. Rusty takes a huge L.
You know, and it just to piggyback on that a little bit, it's tough to take to know that if we have a really good candidate like Crystal Quaid was, and you spend $1 million, I mean, she's going to be greatly outspent by Kehoe, but Richard Brown, who was running for lieutenant governor, I think he raised like $11,000, I'm making up a number here, and they lost by exactly the same margin.
Yeah. So I mean, that's called not progress. And
there was no
progress.
So
if there is no change, but let's be honest, Chris Koster couldn't get out of a Democratic primary. Jay Nixon couldn't get out of a Democratic primary. I mean,
you mean these days?
These days.
Oh, no way.
Oh, I mean, Claire McCaskill.
Maybe now, could maybe not now get, going forward.
Oh, I mean,
maybe Mark, now going I mean, forward.
I hope we get a chance to talk about Claire a little bit later, by the way.
Let's start right now. I mean,
you know what? You could thank me for that.
Okay, so Claire McCaskill.
How embarrassing has she become? I actually used to have a decent relationship with her, and I didn't think she was unhinged as she's come off of an. And maybe she's playing the role in MSNBC, but good Lord, I pray for Claire McCaskill.
So, those who have not seen it, Claire McCaskill, our former U.S. Senator, has spent the last 2 to 3 days literally sobbing on MSNBC about the results. It's disappointing. It's not entirely surprising from a woman who forces her grandchildren to watch replays of the January 6th riot before every Thanksgiving dinner each year.
Is that true?
That is absolutely true. She said that she said that's a family tradition that she insists upon.
You know, one of the things along those lines, and I've heard Claire say this and others on the left, Jane, there are people that have heaped praise on Kamala for having a well-run and executed campaign and no gaffes or embarrassments. Were they watching the same campaign as we were?
I mean, look,
clearly she gets into the race. It's a unique situation. Yeah, I understand that dynamics, but
she did damn good given what happened. I mean,
oh my
look,
God.
It's not her fault. Yeah, I agree with that woman.
100%.
This is the Democratic Party's decisions, okay? I mean, there was some cabal that got together and did this. And we know that. And I mean, I don't care who we put up. I think it would have been the same result. That's what I think. And that's when you know that it's a more fundamental issue than just a candidate issue. I don't think it would have mattered. I think people are so fed up.
You think Biden would have done better?
No.
I don't think he would have won.
No, I don't.
I mean, he may have done better because there may have been people that would have been okay, but not good enough to even make a change in the results. So,
but if 2 years ago, if Biden would have said, I'm not running, and we would have had a full-blown primary.
We still would have screwed it up.
I'm just saying.
Better chance, though, maybe.
Nothing would have
changed.
Better chance. I don't think Kamala would have won that Democratic primary.
She wouldn't answer questions. She did not act like a human being.
Until the last 2 weeks, then they tried to get desperate with
guys,
things.
What were you thinking? You had a nice old man from Scranton, Pennsylvania, who is a Catholic, who had legitimate centrist credentials, and you threw him over for a California communist female who's half Indian and half black and can't answer a single question. This is like Dukakis, only worse.
Frankly,
I can't believe you guys actually saw
it. I don't think it's her. I
can't believe you actually thought she... Listen, Biden was going to lose, too. Biden would not have endangered your political coalition going forward. That's why I never thought that you guys were going to throw over Biden, because Kamala was so clearly an incredibly damaged candidate. We have not seen a worse Democrat candidate for president since Michael Dukakis. It was obvious to anyone who was watching.
It is ironic to hear them talk about
flabbergasted. We were flabbergasted you guys would do something so stupid as to nominate the woman who finished behind Yang.
I mean, this is, the irony of you talking about damaged candidates. This was, to me, this election had little or nothing to do with the candidates, and it had to do with, you know, the Democrats have lost their way, and people were sick and tired. They're sick and tired of sanctimonious. Everybody's a racist. Everybody being told that they're evil. Everybody being talked down to. The paternalistic way
it accumulates.
Of governing.
Absolutely.
It did accumulate. And since 2014, that's where we've been. It's been 10 years of hell.
Right.
And think about the ramifications. It's policing. They've dismantled policing. They're just trying to dismantle higher education. I mean, they're dismantling everything. And so people are very unhinged because they're like, well, the rules don't apply. Well, guess what? When you tell people for 10 years the rules don't apply, they start believing that.
Well, that's why I blame the media a lot. Jane Duker, State Rep. Cbuts, Greg Keller, all here. Let me ask, and this is serious because I'm confused and I'm hearing this from some of the friends that I've had that have taken out against me this week, and people are experiencing this in their own lives as well. But I was told by people that this is about women. Like one of my friends said, because I was, Greg knows this because he follows on Twitter, we share some of the same aggressiveness on Twitter. Was I gloating a little bit on Wednesday morning? Oh, you
clearly.
Damn well I was, okay?
We all listened to you.
Right, exactly. So, but my friend said, look, I'm sure you'll get a lot of things we want with full control, but don't bask in the pain of women. Come on. So that's confusing to me. Women can still kill their babies in Missouri, so you got that going for you. So where is the women? And I'm very, very serious. Where is this coming from? Do you think there's going to be a national abortion ban? I've heard people say they think that Trump's going to take away birth control. No. I don't understand that. Women have more rights in this country than they ever have had.
Okay, but Mark, as a father of four young adult daughters, I can tell you, especially my youngest one who's 28, didn't live through Trump winning 8 years ago. She's just a kid, right? The others were a little older. I can tell you that they have, and they are really great young women, but they can't stand the way Trump talks about women. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't see. I mean, you got to be able to see that. I mean, the guy is a pig when it comes to women.
Well, I mean, yeah. he just picked the first female White House press secretary in history. And by the way, if that had happened with Joe Biden or a Democrat, it would have been the banner on the New York Times, and they barely even mentioned it.
Yeah, but he grabs them by the pee.
Well, you know what? Let me address that. Okay, I'm gonna talk about something here because this is interesting, and I was not happy when that came out, right? But it's taken me a while to understand. We all. Steve, Greg, me, Jane, you're in the guys group here, okay? And you're going to know why. There's this, people are going to know what this is, but there's this little joke that gets, you know, recycled from time to time. And it certainly happened this week where there's a black man that has a very giant penis, okay? And that little gif, well, just bear with me here. You know what I'm talking about, Steve, don't you?
Woody. His name is Woody.
Right. Okay.
Rest in peace.
His image gets shared amongst a lot of friends groups because they try to trick people into pressing the gift. So this week, the tip is always the San Francisco Chronicle. Someone will share something. I bring it up because we all share locker room humor. We say things we wouldn't say in public in front of people. There are things that happen, you know, pretty crude language in a lot of our lives. And I'm fond of profanity, but people talk that way, okay?
But we don't do it publicly in mixed company.
Well, he didn't do it publicly. It was recorded and it got leaked, Steve.
Deer Camp Weekend.
You would never say what he said. And I know.
I would never say that.
Of course
you
wouldn't. Because you do not disrespect women that way. We all do locker. I'm a locker room.
I know you are. That's why I brought you into the group here.
I mean, there's girls, guys, and guys. Yeah, I'm one of those. I hang out with more men than I do women. The men that I hang out with would never say what he said. You can explain it all you want, but that is reality. But does that mean that women are allowed to be victims? I mean, you know what? There are jugheads everywhere. You have two choices in life. Either go on, do your job, do the best thing you do. I mean, I have a fundamentally different way of dealing with, like, misogyny in the workplace. I was subjected to state senators kissing me with their tongue. I've had them touch my stomach. I've had the most crazy things said to me in my career. But you know what? I mean, I had two choices.
You haven't played the victim, Jane. You haven't played the victim.
Stop being the victim. Okay.
Two things can be true. The Access Hollywood tape was obviously unfortunate. I agree with Jane. I would hope I would never say that.
You wouldn't.
Even if, yeah. But here's the larger problem for the Democrat Party is the primary reason they find themselves in this position politically right now is because their party has become overly feminized. And I have been saying.
And infantilized.
And I have been saying. Said this for weeks before the election day. They were always talking about the gender gap. Oh, Trump is going to lose women. Trump is going to lose women. And I tweeted this and a bunch of smart people did for weeks. Whatever the gender gap is against Donald Trump amongst women, it will be better than that and then some amongst men.
And it was.
But you don't want, I mean, I it's not a great thing that he survives without women. I just think that's not great. I mean, I would prefer to have a president that women feel like, okay, we're gonna get a fair shot here. And it is what it is.
Now,
But I blame white progressive women.
The exit polls do show he did win for what it's worth. Suppose you guys thought that white suburban women on the abortion vote were going to carry you through. We now know from the exit polls Donald Trump carried white suburban women by 4 points. So he had plenty of women as part of
his. And by the way, I wasn't the one who said that.
Donald Trump had plenty of women as part of his coalition.
I agree.
Obviously, he did, and I know some that did. And I'm just saying, if you just think at the very end, Trump said so many things, you think nobody can say that stuff or do that stuff and survive. Yet, I mean, he is Teflon Don. There's no doubt about it. We can't deny it. When at the very end, when he was saying, you know, I'm going to protect the women of America, even if they don't like it. I mean, believe me, my wife, who is the sweetest thing, she's I'm going to kick him right in the.
He says things that drive me nuts. Greg probably gets.
It's crazy that you win.
But you know, you guys are going to have a lot to figure out here in a couple years. But none of this stuff that you predict is going to happen. And I hope really good things happen with Elon and other people and resources. I hope we really seriously get to work and help the American people and not just seek retribution. But, you know, it ain't going to be easy. Hang on, one more segment to go. One more segment to go here with Jane, State Rep Steve Butts, Greg Keller, Republican consultant. Let me, for a moment here, because I like to do this, make it all about me. Keller, I'll start with you. I'm very concerned I'm going to lose two very good friends in this whole thing, because if Jennings is the White House press secretary and Schmidt goes to the cabinet, I'll never see those guys again, will I?
No, you never see them again, although I was...
They will pretend they don't know you.
I know.
I'm about to be quoted. I may be pre-quoting myself, but I'll be in the Kansas City Star this week saying that I hope Eric Schmidt does not become attorney general. He could be U.S. Senator for as long as he wants to be. He could get into leadership. Of course, he could be attorney general. I would like to see him be...
I'm with you.
After Kehoe does his 8 years, I'd like to see him be governor of this state and then run for president himself.
I mean, I think being... I mean, look, let's face it. I mean, Donald Trump's going to be lame dunk pretty darn soon. And... You know, he's young enough. He's got a, you know, he's got a career.
But do you think it would be a good idea? Because his administration position, I do too, personally. I think it would be, outside of my friendship and never seeing him again,
yeah.
I think he has opportunities in the Senate. On that note, you heard, what the Hawley in the promo from Mark Cox, what his pick, John Cornyn. Who's going to be the Senate Majority Leader, in your opinion?
Oh, I have no idea. I haven't even checked that out.
Yeah, they're talking about Rick Scott. His name is mentioned.
No, Rick
Thune has been mentioned.
It's not going to be Rick Scott. I think it's going to be Thune.
That's what I thought,
and
too.
I mean, that would not be a bad choice.
Yeah. I miss Tim Walz already. I do. Come on. If they don't do Jim Gaffigan
Jim Gaffigan, I know. Trump said he was going to be out of a job.
Well, what's going to, this is actually a serious question, because if you remember, oh my God, I'm going to roll my eyes, Saturday Night Live, when Hillary lost, they did this piano intro and all this stuff. Can they not try to be funny? Because they're not funny unless they bring cast members that haven't been on the show for a long time. Dana Carvey has been so good. I'm going to miss that.
They have been funny these last
really
couple
funny.
Months.
And I love that they make fun of everybody. Isn't that the point? We make
exactly.
fun of everybody. Everybody.
But they had that opportunity, Jane, for 3.5 years, and they only took it now in the last couple of months. That's weird to me.
Can we make America funny again?
Thank you.
Mafa.
Hey, especially
that's
on Saturday
my,
Night
Mafa.
Live.
Mafa. Just generally. Everything needs to be funnier. Everything. Can we talk about local? Can we talk about the change that's going to be happening in St. Louis County?
Yeah, let's do that, because there are implications to what's happening in St. Louis County, and those are maybe things that affect people's lives more than
yes.
what's happening on a presidential
Correct.
Level,
yes.
right?
Yes. So we have one. So there's going to be a 6-1 majority against Sam Page. So that's going to be very interesting times for him.
Explain that a little
yeah.
bit for people who don't
well,
know the
because,
numbers and
you know,
why that's happening.
Ernie Trakas, one of his reliable sycophants,
Gone.
Lost. He lost in the Republican primary, and then the Republican won. Page put a whole bunch of money against the Republican who won. Mike Archer, who's a former prosecutor, a lawyer, normal person. So that's great. And then Kelly Dunaway, it was not running for reelection. And
Gretchen Banger,
a wonderful
Democrat, ally with Sam Page.
And a former county auditor, which we need. So
Gretchen is?
Yes.
Okay.
She was former county auditor. And, of course, Sam supported her appointment. Sam Page has put significant amounts of money against every single sitting council person except Lisa Clancy. And he wonders what his life is going to look like.
How's Lisa doing this week? I'm kind of worried about her.
Yeah, she's probably
and
there's
Dr.
probably
Green,
a TikTok
you said,
out
did
there.
You say Dr. Green deactivated her
she
Twitter account?
One of them.
Deplatformed herself from Twitter just today, it looks like.
And here's the other thing, is we have a prosecutor's office that's falling apart.
That's the next step I wanted to take. So explain this, because now there's a debate, or at least a disagreement, over who gets to appoint the new prosecutor. Wesley mm-hmm. Bell, elected to Congress, he's going to D.C.
Yes.
to replace Cori Bush. So then we need a new prosecutor for St. Louis County. Is it Governor Parson, or is it Sam Page?
I think it's and I've done most of these cases where you have an alleged conflict between state statute and a charter. And this is a really close call. And I can see where both of them are going to fight.
In other words, it's not clear who has that responsibility.
I think there are very good arguments on both sides. But somebody has to be the unequivocal appointing authority. So there has to be an answer. Here's what I think, though. I think neither one of them are going to back down, because why would they have this fight publicly if one of them was going to back mm-hmm. down? And so what I think will happen is they're both going to appoint someone, and then they're both going to file quos to remove the other one, and the courts are going to have to decide.
Didn't you say, though, doesn't the governor get to appoint, but Sam Page has to go through an approval process with
the county
council?
Well, there are two different processes. That's the thing. There's a charter process that requires, council approval. In the general statute for all prosecutors all over the state, there's a statute that says the governor fills the vacancy until the next, general election. So And it's weird. There's no cases. There's never been a situation. Now, we had St. Charles when Tim Lomar resigned. Yeah. The governor did not, and that's a charter county, and he did not assert his rights to have this appointment. Now, the city has a special statute, and it's unequivocal that it's the governor, and that's the only person that appoints. So we're really in some gray area here. So we're probably going to have dueling quo warrantos. Sam is trying to get this process moved up before the new council comes in, because he's trying to get his minion, Beth Orwick, to be the prosecutor. So he has someone who won't file a quo against him for violating the charter for continuing to work. So it's going to be very interesting times. The county prosecutor's office is asking for a supplemental budget. That means to get through till December 31st, Bill 212. And he's asking for $976,000 to get him through till the end of the year.
For 2 months.
For 2 months. And, you know, he tried to say, oh, it was because the state owes us $54,000. No, there is a fundamental budget deficit going on in the prosecutor's office. Sam Page is silent because he needs Wesley Bell to cooperate with him to try to, you know, stage this coup in grabbing the prosecutor's office for himself. I mean, the whole thing is just
anybody have
outrageous.
Any thoughts on that, Greg?
I would just like, I'm really excited about us trying to do something. I'm a St. Louis County resident. I would love to see us do something about Sam Page in an electoral sense.
Absolutely.
I don't think a Republican can win that seat the way that the county is organized politically right now. But if we could find a competent and law and order Democrat to take on Sam Page in the next election, that is one of the most important things that common sense St. Louis Countyans can be focused on.
You can't do it anymore. Yes. You moved
and
into
you
the city.
I moved
rumors.
Into the city.
I mean, there's Brian Williams.
Williams would be an
exceptional.
It's a
name that comes up.
Yeah, a lot of people are. I think people are lining up to beg him to
Brian Senator from
University. But Brian Williams and Steve Roberts are basically, they're at the top echelon of Senate leadership now, right?
They are. I mean, they're going to be term limited out here in a couple years.
But I mean, Brian is just so uniquely situated to, he's worked in county area for his entire career, and he is so in tune, and he is actually someone. I worked with him on the police reform bill, and he was able to get to a table, police, you know, sheriffs, the NAACP, the ACLU. I mean, he got everybody to a table and came up with a bill that passed a Republican-dominated legislature. I mean, we need that kind of person who can work and get everybody to the table to make things better. And I think that he can keep Tashar in line. Sam is not... He is letting Tashara lead him around by the nose, and that is certainly what we do not need in this region.
Got a little technical problem on our end in our headphones. I hope that's not on the air right now.
Big fan of Senator Williams. I think he'd be great. I hope we keep him around just in the region in some
capacity.
This would be a good one. And if he wasn't going to run for Congress, and I really encouraged him to do so originally, but...
Well, he's got a new baby. I can kind of see.
I get it. You know?
But, I mean, so we have to. So, Greg, you and I, and I'm telling you, this is the most bipartisan thing you can find in St. Louis County is everybody that wants to end the tyranny that's in St. Louis County. Let's work together and get it done because, look, our region needs it.
We definitely need it. And I think that Mike Kehoe is going to play a role in that for sure moving forward. Thank you, gang. I appreciate it. We kept it nice and civil here. We can hug it out afterwards. Steve, great to see you.
Thanks, Mark.
Keller, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
And Jane's going to hang out. We're going to have a little fun in the next hour.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hi, I'm John Meacham, the host of Cadence 13's new podcast, Fate of Fact, on how America and its political parties got to where we are today. Available now on Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.